welcome. It's time for Catalog and Cocktails. It's your honest, no BS, non-salesy conversation about enterprise data. I'm Tim Gasper, joined by Juan Cicada. Hey, Juan.
Tim, it is always a pleasure to do our podcast and be in people's ears and if they're watching us. And I am so excited to have a guest who is this guy who knows a little bit about data and governance and stuff. Jason Doerr, who's actually, we've been like trying to schedule this like for 6 months and finally we're doing this. Jason, how are you doing? Finally, it's great to have you here on the podcast.
Doing great, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me. Absolutely. It's been a long time coming, but I'm excited we were able to finally make it happen and happy to chat with you guys today. Nerd out on data for a little bit, my favorite subject.
So well, this is great. Data and cocktails, two great things.
That's right. Yeah. What's better?
Tell and toast. So what are you drinking and what are you toasting for?
Yeah. So, hey, got a whiskey sour here. Oh, back it up from the camera a little bit. But good old classic cocktail.
You got some decent foam there. You did a good job.
That's right. I went traditional with the old egg white and everything. So I really spruced it up for you guys. So, yeah. It's absolutely delicious. And, you know, toasting for, you know, finally the tailwind that I think data governance needed to be cool again. You know, AI has been quite the tailwind to push us in the right direction. And it's finally being recognized that we got to do the stuff that we've all been saying for the last 20 or 30 years. So I'm toasting to that today.
I think that is something we'll definitely want to, well, we're super excited about how all the stuff that many folks like you were talking about working and people not paying that much attention, but now people are coming to us. So that's great.
That's right.
Tim, what are you drinking?
I'm keeping it really simple today. I got some Appleton Estate 8-year reserve rum. So just a little bit of rum. Neat. What about you, Juan? What are you drinking?
I did a mix of things here. So I'm on my Campari thing. So I'm looking up Campari. I opened up the bar and like I saw that bottle of liquor 43. I just did a quick search what to do with it. So this came up on a Google search. It's called Untitled. It was somebody. So it's bourbon, liquor 43, a little bit of sweet vermouth, Campari with a couple dashes of bitters. It's very, very boozy. It's very, very good. Cheers for data being cool.
Governance is cool.
Cheers.
All right. Well, Jason, let's kick it off. Honest, no BS. How do you make sure that data governance is not just about control?
Yeah. I think it's a good question. You know, I try to think about data governance as what's in it for my customer, not necessarily what do we need to do for all the regulatory reasons. When I say my customer, you know, those are the ones that I'm working with generally in the business. You know, data governance is traditionally a business-based function. You hear that a lot, but I think we're kind of like the glue that brings everybody together. We got to know our privacy folks, our security folks. We got to know our legal folks. We got to know our business folks. We got to know our technology folks, our architecture folks, right? And it's really important to me, like, to go figure out what's important to them, what's important to my executives, right? Because I think that's the way we really try to, you know, get the success that we need and not make governance a regulatory hurdle, but something that actually, like, creates enablement, right? What does success look like? Well, it's me making the lives of my customers easier. And I don't want it to just check a box to say, oh, I've got some FERC regulation or some privacy regulation that I have to do, but it needs to really provide value. So I think to do that, you have to go understand your business and you really need to know what's important to people. What does success look like? You know, I like to go talk to my business customers and ask for their scorecards. Like, what are your important KPIs and how can we actually remove some pain for you? As opposed to, hey, I'm this big, scary governance guy coming to tell you all the things you're doing wrong and you have to do it this way because. So that's how I think about it. How about you guys?
I like that framing of it. And I like the idea of like coming to other groups and saying, hey, let me understand your core scorecards and your KPIs, because I think there's a lot to be said around first impressions, right? And if the first impression you're going to make on different parts of the business is, hi, my name is Tim or my name is Jason, and I just wanted to let you know that we've got these regulations that we need to abide by. So I've got a policy that I've written that I want to make sure you abide by. You know, that just creates a very different kind of relationship, doesn't it?
It sure does. Yes.
And it's like people don't want to be told how to do their job. And like, you got to do your job this way so you can win or not. You can't do this thing. It's like, I think it's a lack of empathy, like meeting them where they are. So this is the type of stuff that, I mean, we're listening to this and sounds the obvious thing, but we know that so many people are not doing this. Why do you think that the obvious thing that we should be doing doesn't seem that many people are doing it? Like, what's missing here?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question, Juan. So I was actually just doing some research on this the other day. It's like, you know, why haven't we done this for the last 30 years? And I think it comes down to the fact of everybody's just busy. When we talk, you know, ontologies, when we talk semantics, when we talk knowledge graphs, I know, Juan, those are some of your favorite subjects. We a lot of people hear one word, documentation. And it's the thing that people don't necessarily love to do. And it's always the last thing that we need to, because it's perceived that it doesn't provide as much value. And it may not provide value now, but I think it provides value later. So it's always the thing of, I'll do it next week, I'll do it next week. And we just keep kind of calendar pushing it as a priority. And, you know, what I'm trying to think about now is, you know, in the world of agentic AI or just AI in general, right, it's been the hype for obviously the last couple of years. You know, I hear a lot of governance folks still being like, AI bad, don't do that. It's, you know, just going to give you bad decisions quicker or bad information quicker if you don't, you know, understand your data quality or have the context. And while I do absolutely subscribe to that theory, it's more of a, well, what do we do instead, right? Because not using AI is not going to be the solution. People are going to use it. So I'm trying to position, how do I use AI to accelerate my ability to create a semantic layer, right? And I'm seeing some folks doing this in the world. And, you know, one of the big projects that I've been working on recently is to use an LLM to recommend data sensitivity labels and descriptions for tables, columns, et cetera. And not to go do it for us, right? But this is real basic stuff. And what it does is it positions your data stewards as data validators now instead of metadata creators. And it allows us to accelerate our pace of delivery to be able to get that done. And people see it as a value add activity, right? It helps them. It helps this notion of self-service as we think about data and analytics. And also the executives and everybody loves it, because you're like, hey, you're the governance guy using AI. And we appreciate that. So
I like that. Have you found that, you know, when you're starting to use LLMs to generate some of these descriptions and things like that, you know, I know sometimes you can run into situations where it's not contextual enough or specific enough to your business. And so you need to kind of like find a way to nudge it in the right direction. Have you found that, like, when you're, you know, sticking in system prompts or, you know, what it would, like, you know, I'm curious about your tactics. Like, have you found that you've been able to get it pretty tight on some of the use cases that you've been applying it for?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely been a learning journey. Our initial, you know, first couple cracks at it were just like a generic description, didn't necessarily give the business context that we needed. But as you build that catalog over time and you get the stewards that come in, these are learning those experiences, you know, similar to that machine learning type concept, that additional time. Yeah. We're going to see some pretty rapid acceleration in terms of see.
We get 1 second here. Just we're recording, but it doesn't matter. Like, we're hearing a little bit of you're breaking up a little bit, Jason. I don't know if we want to turn off your camera for a second. See, this is the honest, no BS. This stuff sometimes happens.
Technology, yeah.
Technology. We can. Yeah. Right, let's keep enjoying your drink. But let's keep. This will be a fun one, and we'll get Jason back here in a second. We'll see him, but. And I think we got Jason back.
Hey, Jason, can you hear us okay?
You're back. Great. All right.
Hey, guys.
No worries. No worries. This is what happened. So one of the things that when you start kind of generating now, using LLMs to start generating kind of your semantic layers, right? Your private, like all this stuff they can generate for you, this metadata. One of the things that I'm concerned about, let me jump ahead here, is that vanity metrics. Like, oh, look at the amount of things that we're able to generate or not. Like, is that something that you're, I'm wondering how you're dealing with that?
Yeah, I think vanity metrics are always going to be a component, but I also don't think they're going to go away, right? I think vanity metrics do exist out there because, you know, I like to say that sometimes a little bit of what we do really just is sales and marketing, right? That's kind of my running joke, is that data governance isn't data governance at all. It's really sales and marketing in a lot of capacity. But I also think there's other value add metrics that you can get from it as well, right? So sure, there's the, hey, look at that 30% of our data estate that we've classified now, and we were able to run so much quicker, great, what does that actually do from us, for us from a value add perspective? So to me, I try to think about it of, okay, you're always going to have vanity metrics, but how do you do other value add metrics? I'm a big voice of the customer guy. I know it's overly simplified, but is this actually helping people? So we like to pull the people that are using our, you know, our Databricks environment as an example to say like, hey, are you finding things quicker? Is it more accurate? Do we have situations where we're not perpetuating misuse of data? Because once you put it out there and you expose it, people use it, they think they're using it for the right thing, but maybe they're not. Just self-service discovery of things, you know, something as simple as being able to like name a data steward in a catalog where people can expose, who do I go talk to about this data? How are we getting that information quicker, faster than we ever did before? We're also thinking about. So in short, Juan, I think vanity metrics always still exist. You're never going to fight against them. But how do you make sure that they aren't the only metrics that you're measuring is the way that I try to think about it.
That's a great point. That's actually that's an honest no BS right there. It's like, look, we can't just say, we're not going to have vanity metrics. They'll always be there, right? Like nature will want to go find a way to show how, like, look how amazing I am, right? That's not going to go away. But I think what is really important here is to connect that quote unquote vanity metric with something that's directed to the value. And then you can keep your vanity metric, but you know that it's tied to something that's a value. And I think that's an important aspect right there. I'm curious if I'd love for you to share examples in your scenario and kind of like you can generalize some of your examples of how you've been using data governance to really do enablement. Like, what are the things that you've been able to accomplish because you were able to have that governance in a way that is embedded and not like I'm telling you, you have to do it this way and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, you solve real pain for folks, right? So when you think about, like, let's just use cataloging as a general example, right? Because it's a popular topic. Everybody's thinking about it with this concept of semantic layer. You know, we had a particular situation with one of our teams where they had one person that was really responsible for the curation of a very critical report that went out every single year that was regulatorily mandated. And this person left the company and there wasn't an inventory of the data sources or who she went to go talk to feed into that report, right? So this is a great opportunity to go say, hey, you know what can solve this problem? Data governance can. So let's start small. I use this concept of PADU, preferred, acceptable, discouraged, and unacceptable, where discouraged is really my minimum path of viability for data governance. It's the real basic stuff. What are your most critical KPIs? What are your business processes? What data feeds into those? What is an inventory? Do you know what source it comes from? Hey, who do you go talk to about this? What do you know about the data? And I meet people where they're at. So I don't say, hey, come into my enterprise data catalog and you can do all this cool stuff. I say, hey, let's fill out a spreadsheet together because they're very familiar territory with most of your business folks. And you know that is parlayed into a process that has gained efficiency. And now we build on that every year. We don't try to solve it overnight. We say, hey, let's incrementally get better. And now they're starting to move a lot quicker. And now they're getting into some really cool stuff where they can enhance that process and add some permanence to it. So that's one example of how I try to approach it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I haven't heard of PADU before. And I know Juan and I both kind of lit up a little bit. We're like, oh, interesting. Like, tell us more.
Hold on. So where is this coming from?
Go ahead.
Yeah. How did you know? How did you learn about this? Like, Tim and I have been doing this podcast for almost 6 years now. We've talked to a lot of data governance people. This is the first time PADU comes up. Tell us more. How did you learn about this?
PADU is not a general framework that you see much in the data governance space. You will see it a little bit more in like your enterprise architecture type areas. And they technically generally use it when it comes to patterns. You know, okay, I've got this use case. What's my preferred pattern? What's an acceptable pattern? What's a discouraged pattern? And what's just something that we won't allow to happen and is unacceptable? And that's where that acronym of PADU comes from. I like to apply it to the data governance space, and I kind of take all the capabilities of data governance and I map them into a roadmap to basically say, hey, let's use this model a little bit differently, but help meet people where they're at. I don't need you to do textbook perfect data governance within your business domain on day one. But like, here's some pretty critical stuff that'll help you and help the larger enterprise in what we're trying to do. And that's, I mapped some of those capabilities into the discouraged path. And I said, okay, hey, let's just get you here. And if we can get you there, then we can start to say, well, what does it take to get you to the next level? And they kind of grow into it. You kind of gamify the system a little bit in some way, and you're actually achieving stuff that equates to value and outcome versus just, hey, let's check a box because that's what the data governance framework say you're supposed to do. I'm very pragmatic in my approach, right? You know, like there's a lot of frameworks out there that you can use. I think it's really important to like take textbook data governance and do what works in your organization, right? Don't try to force a framework in, but you got to bend it a little bit.
Yeah, it's not one size fits all.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think I'm really happy how you're talking about just being super pragmatic about this. And I think people usually kind of like understand that you see these frameworks and you have the whole DAMA, right? The like cycle and all these stuff. It's like, doesn't mean that you have to go do it exactly as is. Like you take the stuff and apply it, right? It's a framework, right? It's a reference and you can look at that stuff. Being very pragmatic. I'm curious, what are things that you've seen in the past that people try to do, like buy the books, and that's like, no, don't do that. Like, just like give me examples of like being pragmatic that some people may may step back. It's like, no, Jason, like you shouldn't, like you're being too open about that stuff. But you're like, hey, that's being pragmatic. We're getting the work done. We're getting the job done.
Yeah. I mean, I think cataloging for the sake of cataloging without a use case tied to it is one that I see a lot. People are like, well, I need to go find all the data across my whole enterprise and put it into the central spot. And my question is always, well, for what? Like, what problems are you solving? What does that actually do for you? Versus taking a more pragmatic use case driven approach to say, where do I have investment in my company? Where is this needed? Where is this causing problems? And then how do I kind of build my catalog over a particular period of time? AI is a huge catalyst right now. Companies all over the place are like, AI use case that. There's a lot of investment around that. Those are great opportunities for you to go insert yourself as an enabler, not as a governance person that says, no, we can't do that, but hey, here's what we can do, but here's some prerequisites that we need to think about. Let's incrementally improve cataloging as we're going out and doing this to make sure that as we have these AI use cases, maybe we know what the data quality is. That's a pretty important one. Or AI has the metadata context in the business descriptions. So I think that's one. Another one that I see a lot is data stewards, like just naming data stewards on a list. I've got my domains, I've got my data stewards, but then my next question is, what do they actually do? Like, is there anything for them to physically action against? A lot of organizations have data stewards, not as a full-time role. It's a side of the desk type activity. Like, you've already got 100% of your work to do. Here's another 20%. And something always gets bumped off the list. And I think it gets back to that documentation. You know, metadata really takes a hit when it comes to that because, well, let's be honest, no BS, ain't nobody got time for that, right? So I think it's important to give them something to do, to action against, to say, hey, here's where you're at, Neo, and here's where we want to get you to. And you want to partner with them. You want to remove real pain for them and make their jobs easier along the way. So those are some examples I see pretty regularly.
Those are good examples. And, you know, data stewardship's an interesting one. You've been talking to Juan and I for a while. So, you know, that, you know, we've all been in the sort of cataloging and governance space for a while. Stewardship's interesting because I find it's very unevenly implemented in companies. And in some organizations, it's a very heavy duty role where you're taking a lot of responsibility. In some cases, it's very light touch. Another area where I see it varies a lot is in how much the steward is taking on documentation responsibilities, right? Where like sometimes a steward is really more driving the sort of like coordinating quarterbacking a little bit more, and then you're leaning on like subject matter experts or data producers for that documentation. Versus, you know, a steward is really more like, no, I gotta become the subject matter expert and lean in. Have you seen some best practices around like where, you know, pragmatism meets effectiveness?
Yeah. I think I have. I go back to that. You know, what do we expect them to do? And how do we make sure we don't add more work to their plate? I think that's something you really have to watch out for with data stewards is the more places you put their name, the more people reach out to them, right? So you have to balance that with not trying to inundate them with requests and get them into the mindset of, hey, you don't necessarily have to be an enterprise gatekeeper for all of this data. You have to get this information out of your head and give it in a place where it could be self-explored or people can consume it. You know, one of the use cases I'm kind of playing with right now is using, whether it's Microsoft Copilot or whether it's Genie Rooms inside of Databricks, is how do we create this concept of a virtual data steward, where basically it has all of the, you know, uses like this knowledge graph type concept of like, what's the documentation about the domain? What are your critical data elements? What does data quality look like? And people can go ask natural language questions to one of these LLM type situations But the data steward has observability and visibility to that. I think that's important because it makes them feel good. So not just farm out your decisions to an agent, that's not what I'm saying, but help to make sure that you're not putting a lot of additional work on data stewards who may not have capacity for it. So that's something I try to watch out for.
This is the moment where I think that we're able to, with agents, be able to kind of amplify, like be able to clone the data stewards, right? People, like, it's always hard. Yeah. It is hard work to do that. And somewhat manual, like now we'll be able to go have the data steward be the manager of a bunch of data steward agents and go do that and orchestrate all that stuff. And then that is how we're going to be able to scale this out. Otherwise, yeah. Be very focused focused on the business value and what are the outcomes we're going to go do. And I think that's what I'm really excited about.
On that point, I've been thinking about that a lot, you know, this idea of like even your central data governance teams essentially rising to be like agentic managers, right? Where maybe they're not doing the same type of role they were doing for the last 5 years, but they kind of bump up a level and they're allowed to do more with less, leveraging some of this technology. I think there's a reskilling component that comes to that. So this is a little bit of a contrarian opinion from some of my other data governance colleagues, but I do think the data governance role being traditionally business focused is a little more in a bit of a transitory state where there's going to be a technological component to it here in the future. And you're going to at least have to understand, how does an LLM work? What is this technology, right? People really need to understand that LLMs are essentially, they score the next best potential words. So it's never going to be like, oh, sorry, Tim, sorry, Juan, I don't know the answer to that. It will always give you an answer. And it'll do it very confidently. So you have to watch out for things like hallucinations wrapped in confidence and, you know, kind of perpetuating misinformation, spreading at an exponential scale. And then also, what are the skills of a data governance team a year from now? What are the skills of a data steward a year from now? And how is that evolving? So I've been thinking a lot about that. Not sure if you guys have an opinion there, but love to hear it.
I like this line of thinking a lot. And I know that there are some people who are a little bit more traditional about governance, and you know we've had some of them on the show, right? And it's a little bit, you know, usually that talk track sounds a little bit more like, hey, look, even with AI and things like that, governance remains largely the same, and you know we just have to lean into it more, and we got to make sure we really focus on the fundamentals, right? Which is important, and that makes sense, right? But there's another point of view here. I liked your phrase when you said your central governance team is starting to evolve into agentic managers. Mm-hmm. I think that's a bit of a hot take because I don't know if everyone agrees with that, but I actually think I do because I don't know. Let me kind of meet your hot take with a little bit of a hot take here, which is that I think that data stewardship in many cases, you know, and related fields, right, related activities, is a bit of a stopgap. Like we wouldn't be doing data stewardship if we were doing a better job of capturing and managing meaning and classification and some of these other things in more rules-based and shifted left ways. It's almost like we have to do stewardship as a reaction. And it's throwing humans kind of at the problem when maybe now we can actually take a step back and manage the machines a little bit more.
I absolutely agree with that hot take. And that's exactly how I'm thinking about it, right? I do think it's going to evolve pretty significantly over the next couple of years.
And I think that this is not just for governance. You can make this argument for so many different other parts of your business.
Sure.
Right,
IT support, right? Or the customer support. Yeah.
I mean, how many people in finance are just like looking at the invoices and checking and like, you know, it's like, ooh, you know, like, you know, automation is going to come and fill in a lot of that, right?
My little kind of soapbox on this part is, I think we're going to start. It's a lot of operational work, and what's going to start happening is that a lot of this operational work can be automated, right, with agents. That means that either the people will be focusing on the most important, kind of the harder, more operational work, and at the same time they need to become more strategic. So I think this is the opportunity where data stewards, like, they need to be then much more connected with the business and be able to understand that become more strategic. And the way you're gonna become more strategic is being connected more with the business. So I think that's gonna be the shift around that. And again, this is not just for governance, but it's for so many different places. So my perspective here is that data stewards right now, like, it's right now their moment that you really need to understand more how the business works and get connected with the business and so forth. Because otherwise somebody else is going to be doing that, and you're going to be just focusing on the operational side. And people are like, agents can do this already.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I think that piece is going to be really important, right? Because the business is going to continue to evolve, and those data governance folks need to make sure they're evolving right alongside them, you know, those data stewards, and making sure we're all moving in a general direction. So, you know, I think about, you know, what is my team going to be doing a year from now, and how do we upskill the data stewards of our company? Because, you know, they vary in a significant amount of skill sets as well. So sure, they know their business, but are they keeping up with even how their business is evolving? Because to your point, Juan, all those processes are going to be changing. What a finance role maybe looks like, you know, or what a documentation type role looks like, or even an analytical role, I think is vastly different.
So I'm curious now, what is like part of kind of your soapbox here is on like some sort of your operating model, right? You talk about like a federated model and how you have small central teams and how they're set up. Like how, what your perspective and your experience, how is the operating model for governance? How should this look like? And where do you think this is evolving?
Yeah. I think the operating model is actually largely the same. You know, it's the federated model. You don't necessarily want to have a central monolithic team that is controlling everything, because I think that is perceived as, you know, governance as a hurdle versus governance as an enabler. You want to embed those folks where they're closest to where they can provide value. They know the biggest challenges that sit within their business. And you want a central team that really kind of gives the, I call it the rules of the road, right? Driving down a highway, you got the guardrails on the left and right. Hey, you know, operate within these lanes. But I don't want to prescribe exactly how you run your business, because you're going to go tell me that I don't know your business and I can't tell you to do that. So again, a hurdle versus an enabler. Or if I say, hey, here's how we like to think about critical data elements. Here's how we like to think about metadata or master data or, you know, semantics. Fit with inside of that. And if you can't, let's have a conversation around what barriers you're running into, I think is largely still the model. What I think is going to be a little bit different is this federated model is going to extend to your agentic enterprise. So this concept of virtual stewards that I'm talking about, I wouldn't necessarily as a central team be the one to manage, you know, the content that goes into that virtual steward. I want the data stewards to be able to do that, but I have to make sure that they have the skills. Hey, how do you update, you know, an agent with a reg-based architecture? Do I even need to talk to you about what a reg-based architecture is? I sure hope not, because really I want to keep it just business focused. So we have to make sure that the technology is evolving in a way that stays business friendly, or we can upskill them appropriately so we don't totally freak them out, because it's a different world.
So Juan, you can go ahead if you want
to. It's making me wonder something right now, which is, I mean, if you have all these virtual stewards, right, then you can actually just have does there actually have to be human data stewards and all the different kinds of business units? Because you can imagine now that the business users, right, well, I'm in finance, I'm in marketing, whatever, like they'll be doing their work, and then the virtual data steward immediately will be doing something for them automatically, or will be checking on them or saying, hey, watch out with that, or so forth. Like, at some point, I mean, like these virtual data stewards, these virtual agents, data steward agents will be around that they're just interacting directly with the business user inside of their current process, that there doesn't necessarily need to be an embedded person in every team, because the agents are the one that are embedded, and then the people are actually probably more the central. I don't know. You just made me think about this right now.
Yeah, I still think you need that centralized domain expertise. You know, I think you need maybe less of them. Mm-hmm. And that's the scaling thing that we've always had challenges doing. To, you know, at a Fortune 500, to have 1,000 data stewards can be a lot of effort. So maybe that footprint of number of data stewards shrinks a little bit. And that's where I think that skill set of elevating them to almost agentic managers becomes, you know, what the data steward organization looks like in the future. You have to teach them, hey, how do these agents work together? How do you look for anomaly detection? How do you react to a report, you know, or maybe, you know, agentic AI offloads to them and they monitor a chat queue on their desktop to say, hey, they've got this question I wasn't able to answer with enough confidence. You know, can you weigh in here? But you're teaching them to make sure that their agentic solutions are getting smarter over time. And then as business processes change, I think that context needs to be, you know, fit in. So there's still a documentation update, a human in the loop requirement that I think is still necessary.
That makes sense. Here's a little bit of not a devil's advocate, but like a challenge. And I'm curious how you feel this challenge should be addressed, which is that, you know, Juan and I are both very big proponents of like kind of the rules of the road, the like the more enablement oriented approach, or you know, we've been talking to Bob Siner lately, and he's talking about, you know, data as a catalyst, and catalyst is a better word than enablement, but it's all kind of the same kind of vein, right? But what you struggle with sometimes, if you take too far of that and more kind of enablement and kind of I'm here to provide the rules of the road, is that how do you actually ensure kind of consistency and quality and accountability on some of these types of things, right? Because obviously the answer isn't, well, if they choose not to do it, then there's not much I can do, right? Like there's a degree of control, and there's some degree of control and power involved, right? So I'm just curious about like, how do you approach ensuring quality, consistency, participation, and things like that from your sort of spokes?
Yeah, I think that's always the hardest part. You know, I always say kind of my phrase is like the technology is the relatively easy part. The people is the hard part, mm-hmm. right? And that's just how it is. You know, is your enterprise ready for it from a cultural standpoint? Is your leadership on board for it? Are the people that are going to be doing the work actually on board for it? So I take a bit of a community-based approach to that. I think some of the fundamentals of, you know, a data organization still exist. The concept of a data owner council, a monthly data steward meeting. Is that going to get you 100% of the way there? No. Will you have data stewards that just maybe don't have the time or taking it, you know, shortcuts or a different approach? Yes. I think there's an observability component to that. So as you think about maybe this agentic approach or whatever, how are you measuring the consistency and the quality output? How are you making sure that you're not farming out the ability for people to get answers incorrectly to questions at an expeditious scale? I think are some absolute challenges, but I think it's observability. And then I think it's just the people alignment. I've found that if you're actually providing them value and you're making their job easier, it's generally not as tough. But if you're just creating more work for them or they don't see value in it, you know, then that's a conversation. If they're still not seeing value in it, then are they the right data steward? I think is the question, you know, does this work for you? Or is there somebody else that we need to put into this role? So I think it's multifaceted. I don't think there's any perfect solution. And I think there's always challenges with every approach, right? But it's a fair pushback, Tim, and I totally agree. So
I think this is the important thing there is like really how we started off, like really understand your customers, really understand what is the work that they're trying to do. What is the process of how they do this, and like make sure that you're helping them, right? You're providing value, making that faster, better, easier. And if you're just adding more work for the stuff that they're already doing, like you're not helping. So
yeah, there's no silver bullet, but if there was one, it's, hey, are we providing value? Because if we're providing value, then the incentives will be aligned.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Well, we got a bunch of takeaways here. Tim, takeaway time.
Take us TTT. Do you remember you used to say TTT a lot? I don't remember what the third T stands for. All right. Honest, no BS. We started with
Tim. Takeaway time.
Tim. Takeaway time. That's right. So we started off, Jason, with, you know, honest, no BS. Data governance isn't about control. What does that mean, right? And you started off by saying you really think about the key stakeholders in the organization that you're working with as sort of your customers. And its success is about making the lives of your customers easier and providing value. And, you know, easier said than done per se, right? But if you think about that from a higher level view of, hey, if we're doing governance in a way that's valuable to the organization, then that's success, and that's going to align the incentives as well, which I think was a theme that kind of came throughout our chat today. You know, in order to do that, it means you actually have to understand the business, and you got to know what success actually means. And that means that, you know, when you're interacting with your counterparts, it probably shouldn't always sound like, hey, I've rolled out this new policy, I need you to comply. And it needs to probably sound a lot more like, hey, like, what is your business working on? What are your goals? What's your scorecard? What are your KPIs? How can we align? How can I support you? Right. Here's what I'm thinking of doing. Here's how I can help you. Right. So I think that's a different way to think about governance, and a more powerful way and a more impactful way that we could think about governance. And then we talked about, why aren't people doing this? You said, you know, folks are busy. And we've talked about semantics and knowledge graph and ontology, but when people hear that in the past, they've often heard, ooh, that sounds like documentation. That sounds like work, right? And that's work that's important, but not necessarily urgent. And so therefore it gets delayed, it gets postponed, it gets sidelined. Now, though, with AI, we kind of don't have a choice. You know, we can't just be like AI bad and kind of ignore it. We do have to lean into this a lot more. But the benefit is that in addition to governance being important for AI, AI is important and valuable to governance. You can use LLMs to help you accelerate that work, to create virtual data stewards, like you mentioned, accelerate things. So I think that's interesting. That's powerful, right? So we can maybe achieve a balance here. Yes, it's more work. Yes, we have to do it. More important than ever, but it's going to be a little easier too. And we talked a little bit about vanity metrics. Like it's important not to over-index on vanity metrics and focus on, you know, how the data state and the work that you're doing is helping avoid misuse, how it's creating value, how it's affecting those KPIs that everyone has. But also it's impossible to 100% avoid vanity metrics, right? So we just got to be clear about it. And then enablement, right? You mentioned PADU, preferred, acceptable, discouraged, and unacceptable. And I think actually that's a cool framework. And you kind of applied it. You said, you know, it's applied usually in enterprise architecture, but you know, you use it in the data governance context to kind of apply the capabilities to a roadmap. I could also see how it could be useful for like use cases as well. When people are deciding how to use a data product or something like that, you can kind of encourage people on like, hey, this data is a better fit for this use case or not. So I like that framework. I'm looking forward to using that.
Yeah, that was a great aha. Somebody love doing the podcast. We learn stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. All right. I love how we just got into how being pragmatic and right. And like calling out the things that are like not pragmatic, things that you shouldn't do, like cataloging for the sake of cataloging, like let's catalog everything versus like obviously start with your use cases. You want to be able to put data stewards on everything, right? I mean, the more places you stick their names, the more people will reach out to them, right? And you also don't want them to be those gatekeepers of everything. Asking natural language helps with discovery and helps to get more leverage from the stewardship work. So we want to be able to achieve things at scale. So it's really important to start thinking about this from a very pragmatic perspective. I really love this perspective, which is your central governance team is trying to evolve into agentic managers. And I think this is not just applies to data governance, data stewardship, it's also to many other parts of your business, which means that there's a lot of reskilling component that needs to happen to this. And not a lot of people might be against this or not, but like this is starting to happen. We talked about operating models that you don't necessarily want to have a central team creating blockers as that feeds that negative stigma. You want to have like the rules of the road from the central team, but not the commandments. I like that. The central team doesn't manage the virtual stewards, so the business should be able to go do that. And the central team needs to make sure that the agenda capabilities are getting smarter all the time. And we wrapped up with how do you make sure people do things in a quality, consistent, active way? I love that you said it. It's a community-oriented approach. The technology is the easy part. It's really the people side of things. So ensure that the roles are clear and there's observability and transparency around the quality of that stewardship of work. It's all about people alignment. So if you're actually providing value, that's a good thing. But if you're just creating more work for people, then you're not doing the right thing there. And I think that's at the end of the day for me, one of the themes that consistently is through our podcast is understand your users, be empathetic with them. Jason, how did we do with our takeaways? Anything we missed?
No, I think you guys did fantastic. I should invite you to most of my meetings so you can just recap them for me. So kudos to both of you. So
well, for that one, I will recommend getting your favorite.
I just had an imaginary vision of like the Tim and Juan like AI companion, and it like kind of joins, and it's like it always has a cocktail in hand.
There you go. I don't see any downside. So.
Well, to wrap it up, we'll throw it back to you. What's your advice? Who should we invite next? And what resources do you follow?
Yeah. You know, I think my advice is always simple. I was just at a DAMA event not long ago talking to kind of the next generation of data leaders, right? College kids that are about to enter the market. And my advice to them is the same advice I'd give to folks listening to this podcast is, you know, never stop learning. This world is always evolving, and it's evolving so much quicker than it ever did before on an exponential scale. You know, this concept of broad consumer access of large language models, your ChatGPTs, your Anthropics, has really only been around for like two and a half years where broadly it's been popular, and it's going to accelerate so much quicker. So keep learning. And then don't forget the basic skill of listening. You don't always have to be the smartest person in the room, and go understand what your business needs and what challenges they're really facing. Don't do governance for the sake of governance. Make sure it's providing value and it's delivering better outcomes. So I know that probably sounds a little cliche or oversimple, but it really is down to those basics. And I think you can be successful.
I appreciate these very specific advices that people need to be following, because at the end of the day, I said this earlier, like, we got to state the obvious over and over again, but there's a reason there's something happening, but it's really important when some like folks like you, Jason, are like, we hear more of this, and this podcast is a great example of like, here's everything goes behind your mind and the reasons why you should be following this advice. So thanks for that. Who should you invite next? What resources do you follow?
Yeah. You know, there's a few folks that, you know, come to mind. There's a gal that I used to work with, and I do various events with her. I think you guys have met her before, but she had no idea I was going to say this, but Mina Holland, she's written her own book. She's the CEO of Neuronova Consulting, and she's got a really interesting aura and org model that she's really trying to push across the data landscape as a governance practitioner. It's kind of inverts some of the previous models that you'll read out there. And I encourage you to look her up on LinkedIn and, you know, see some of her content and have her on the podcast. I think you guys would enjoy the chat with her. In terms of resources, you know, I like to doom scroll LinkedIn every now and again. There's a lot of really interesting opinions out there, so you just never know what you'll uncover. So I just appreciate different people's perspectives. I love contrarian perspectives that challenge the norms a lot, like gets me thinking. You know, Rob Siner's stuff, I've always been a big fan of. His concepts of non-invasive data governance has really been the catalyst for the things that I think about and how I practitioner it in the business. The concept of PADU, of meet people where they are. You know, you don't have to build Rome overnight. Start small and incremental progress. So, and then your traditional Dataversity ones. You know, I go out there and read the various articles. So those are my main sources of info. You guys in this podcast, I actually watch it pretty regularly. I always enjoy this one as well. So.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Well, Jason, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing all of your advice and your experience around here. Looking forward to seeing you hopefully at the one of the next conferences, hopefully maybe a Databricks or something like that. And thank you so much for sharing. This is what we love doing the podcast. It's a community. Like, we meet folks like you through work. You listen to the podcast, you're not on the podcast. So this is such a pleasure. Thank you, my friend. Cheers.
Yeah. Thanks guys. Cheers. Thanks for having me on, and apologies about my camera. Maybe next time.
The most important thing. This all works.
Oh, good. We got a good look at your cocktail, which was key. So,
right, exactly.
Hey, cheers, Jason. Appreciate all your insights.
Cheers. Have a good weekend.